Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. It is Tuesday, the 12th of January. It's very nice to have you with us, as it always is. We have a busy show, a lot going on, and we will get to what we have going on in just a moment. Let me introduce our panel to you. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hi, Joe.
And Rosemary Arameo is with us. Good morning, Rosemary.
Hi,
Very
Joe.
Nice to have you with us. And Mike Spain, who is the associate editor. I'm not giving titles. I should do. Of course, Rosemary is University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter. Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper. Good morning, Michael.
Hi, Joe.
It's very nice to. We haven't had this configuration in a while. It's very nice
it's
to have you back.
That's
great. Not since last year.
Yeah, that's right. So we're very happy to have you all back. We were going to get some business taken care of here before we get into other business, which is the actual body of the show. But we welcome you to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also go online, WAMC.org/roundtable, WAMC.org/roundtable. Just a reminder, our lockbox is open. The lockbox is open and is accepting money. I know you're shocked. If the lockbox contains $500,000 when we start the fund drive on February 1st, we will get $25,000 from the Spitzer Foundation. That is cool. $25,000. That would mean that we would start the drive at $525,000 more than halfway through the drive.
Wow.
As of moments ago, as of about 4 minutes ago, in the box counted $356,521.02.
That's your 2 cents.
Yeah, somebody always has to add their 2 cents. It's a lot of money we have to make in less than three weeks. We have to make $144,000.
It's going to be hard.
Yeah.
Hey, Joe, when you think about it, think about the WAMC community, the audience that has pulled this thing together from the first day in 1979, 1980, when we were broke. The medical college was going to let it all go, and we all got together, and people came out with Chasing Sanborn cans, and kids walked around from door to door and collected the money, and we've been doing it ever since. Look, we're one fund drive away from extinction. That's the truth. There's no other way of looking at it.
Now, I'm hoping that both Mike and Rosemary can help me, because for a $100 pledge to the lockbox, you get the beautiful lockbox tote, which is right behind me on the wall. See, you can see it. I can't. So you can describe its loveliness.
Well, it's big. I actually have been thinking about stealing it and taking it
actually,
home with
you
me.
You could actually get in it.
You could. It looks like a newspaper delivery boy. So remember the little boys
it
I used
does.
To carry?
It looks like
it? Doesn't
the
it look
delivery
like
bag.
That?
The handles aren't quite as long, but it will get over your shoulder.
Yep.
You could carry it on a plane. You could carry it, you know, down the street and carry books. And
I might have to donate to get one of those.
It's made out of recycled soda bottles.
Oh, no. That's cool.
Yeah. So it has a real durability to it.
Great grocery bag.
Absolutely. Thank you. So that's a $100 pledge, and you can get that. And on one side, it has a picture of the actual lockbox in color. And then on the other side, it says WAMC Northeast Public Radio. It's reusable. It's a shopping bag. It's a very popular premium, and we'd love to offer it to you. But, hey, that's not why you're giving. You're giving because you want us to make this challenge. You're giving because you love the radio station, and whatever your reason is.
No, for one other reason. You're giving, and you're going to get this bag so you can get married.
Oh, there's that component to this?
And then you could give it to your daughter, your son.
You could
way.
Just throw it over the head of somebody you want it and drag them to your car. And yeah, it's possible.
I like it, Rosemary. Now you got
it's
the spirit.
It's a utilitarian bag.
This is the 21st century Jason Sanborn can. You can go around and get money for the fun drive.
Hey, well, sure.
Yeah. It's WAMC.org. Help us, WAMC.org.
One more thing on that, Joe, if I may. I always told that story about the Chasing Sanborn can and the wonderful kid who came in. He turned it upside down. All the money came out on the table and all the rest of it. And you know, it's a very poignant story. Point is that one day I'm in an antique shop and I see a Chasing Sanborn can.
Did you buy it?
Yeah. I got to have that Chasing Sanborn can. I put it in the back of my car. And there it sits to this very day. And I always see it there, and I say, what the heck is this? You know, why do I have this in the car?
You need to bring it into the radio
station. Do they still sell Jason Sanborn coffee?
I think so.
Hmm.
I think so. That's right. Yeah, very nice, Mike. she's doing a solo.
Did you see the show where Christina Aguilera was on Jimmy Fallon, and they do this skit where they pretend they mimic singers doing a jingle, and she got Cher singing the Folgers coffee jingle? It was so good. It was just like Cher. It was hysterical.
Coffee jingles were a part of our life for a long time.
She knew all the words to it.
And then Lucky Strike Means Fine Tobacco, LSMFT.
And then she had to sing the words to the theme song to Golden Girls, and she knew that by heart, too. Very impressive.
How about Hoffman's? You don't have to go to university to just know when you're thirsty. Drink Hoffman's. Hoffman is the finest when you're thirsty.
I don't even know what Hoffman is. Yeah. I thought it was the Playland. Well,
I think you have to be a New Yorker to get that.
There you go. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us for our program. We'll be back tomorrow with an. let's get into the subjects for the day. We welcome your comments, as always. So what about the Moreland Commission and Pre-Ferrara saying, no, we're not going to do that?
I thought of Alan when I heard that news. I'm so eager to hear what you're going to say. You were thinking something different.
It's nuanced, see, because he didn't say Andrew Cuomo's innocent. He said there's not enough evidence.
An inquiry by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan into Governor Cuomo's interference with an anti-corruption panel that he created and abruptly shut down has concluded there was not enough evidence to bring a criminal case to court against him. A statement the office released on Monday indicated that, quote, after a thorough investigation, it concluded there was insufficient evidence to prove a federal crime. Alan.
Well, there is some nuance in that, obviously, if you think about it. Not enough evidence doesn't mean there isn't any evidence. Okay. So, and he called all of the principal players in, all of whom, by the way, have been dispatched to other jobs in the private sector. They're not there. And now we are seeing a new—
Cuomo administration people who were involved in the Moreland
Larry Commission. Schwartz, Prococo, those guys. And those people have gone to other places, happy places. And so now the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, also makes it clear that his other investigations, including the Buffalo Billions and how those contracts were let, were still going on. So if I'm Andrew Cuomo, I'm breathing a sigh of relief, but I'm also saying right now, hey, I got to be careful. And I, by the way, happen to be a student of Andrew Cuomo. I watch him and what he does. And I think it's a different guy. I think he has been behaving extremely well. He has this big thing now. He wants to spend a fortune. It's an old Roosevelt trick. He wants to build everything, bridges and subway stations.
Well, we need them.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
He's a very smart guy to do that. But remember, this is the guy who came in as the anti-taxer. That's how he came in.
Well, now we have the money, so we can do it, I guess.
We don't have that money, and you know we don't have that money. And,
well, the state's doing well. If it has all this billions of settlements from Wall Street firms that had to pay fines related to the financial bailouts. And
I think it's $100 billion, something like that, that we need to do all of these.
Yeah, he doesn't have that much.
So it's $100 billion, and a lot of people are going to want those things. But in order to get that $100 billion, you're certainly going to have to borrow, right?
Borrow and tax and
yeah,
toll.
Well, borrow, you pay the vigorish, you pay the interest. Mm-hmm. So therefore, a certain amount of pain.
Yep.
Well, I think it's really curious. I'm wondering if Preet has backed down a bit, waiting to see if Cuomo now will really put in a reform package. Yeah. I think he's giving him a little breathing space. His speeches up to now have all been things like, I can't do this alone, you can't prosecute, you know, good ethics, it has to come from within. Is he giving them a chance to do the right thing? And will Cuomo follow?
Well, you know, up to now, Cuomo's always put in these things which are— he advances as being very important changes, but in fact have turned out not to be so. So now...
You mean in regards to corruption. Cleaning up
so,
government.
Thank you, Mike. That's right. Thank you for that clarification. You're right. But now the boss of the assembly, the new assembly boss, Boss Hasty from the Bronx, he used to be the boss of the Bronx, now he's the boss of the Assembly, they have a couple of plans that they're discussing, none of which rise to the point of really cleaning the sewer out. The two things I have always said that will make a real difference are initiative and referendum. You want to make a constitutional change. Mm-hmm. And what they have in New York City, which is no more than term limits. Those two things would turn the whole thing around. Are they going to do it? No.
Neither of those will get a lot of traction, although there's some talk about recall, you know.
Yeah, but recall is not the same thing.
No.
No, I'm hearing more about end pensions to convicted legislative felons. They shouldn't be able to get money. It's things like that, small things that actually have a big symbolic impact on the public. But I'm wondering if there's been that's the deal. He still has hanging over Cuomo's head that whole Buffalo deal and how he gave out contracts.
Yeah, right.
So it isn't
billion.
Yeah, it isn't as if he's off the hook. Is he just waiting to see what happens?
Do you think and I don't want to use the word deal, but do you think that there was some sort of understanding that there had to be an announcement to come out to not
tie the governor's
create total chaos in the state with whatever an investigation found, and also, you know, and I'm sure it's true that they didn't have enough evidence to go forward. So instead of just saying, okay, we're going to keep the investigation open and keep going, and I like the term you used, a breathing room, say, okay, let's go. So we can get on with the business.
Look
of the
at the
state.
Timing. Here it is, 2 days before his State of the State address. This frees the governor up to talk from a higher mantle about the need for ethical reforms and to clean up government.
Right.
If he was still under investigation for this very visible issue, the Moreland Act Commission, I think it would be more difficult. But as Alan pointed out, the Buffalo billion investigation where it's alleged that the Cuomo administration steered some of the spending to campaign contributors, and there was some, perhaps some illegal activity going on, a little quid pro quo. That's not been proven, but that's been alleged, and Preet Bharara is looking into that. That could still come back to haunt him. But as far as the Moreland Act Commission goes, yes, there's not enough evidence to support a federal charge, one that he could win in court. He didn't have tapes like he did with Dean Skelos. He didn't have the proof
prosecution
that
witnesses that
he had with Shelley Silver, that he was, you know, essentially getting a portion of money that he was bringing into the firm, et cetera, et cetera.
The other interesting thing is he hasn't given up on any of the cases that the Moreland Commission itself was looking at.
Yes, he's pursuing those.
As well.
Right. The Moreland Commission was looking into some uncomfortable things for the Cuomo administration, including contributions from major lobbies in New York City, and they continue to look into that.
Well, let's face it.
Yeah.
It's still a dark cloud over Andrew Cuomo. He never should have stopped that Moreland Commission.
Right, but that was a political deal.
No,
and
that's
it might
right.
have been a bad political deal. He claims it was in exchange for reforms he was seeking from the legislature.
Bad reforms, by the way. Ineffective reforms.
Yeah.
But that's just one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it was
he shut down that
the investigators were coming close on the real estate industry, which we now know from these trials have immense interest and money. That they've been giving out, including to Andrew Cuomo.
Doesn't it make you just wonder what might have happened if the commission had stayed in effect for another 1 or 2 years?
Well, it had kind of stopped being effective. I mean, the staff was lethargic.
True.
They weren't showing up for work. There was some question about
where the
funding was. Right.
Already being interfered.
It had already kind of become a shadow of what it had been when it first kicked off in 2013 when the governor promised he would give full cooperation and, not touch
attention
anything.
And all
right.
that.
And remember, he
happened.
Put his own people in charge. In other words, they were Cuomo aficionados, for want of a better word, who ended up being the staff on this. And the New York Times did a phenomenal job. Our friend Ken Lovett, by the way, he always should get credit, broke the story about
for the Daily News.
The Daily News as how they were calling it all the plays. And then the New York Times did a fabulous, fabulous story, which went on forever.
But, that's not against the law. That's just bad politics. It's sneaky, but it did not raise to the level of a federal crime, according to the federal prosecutor.
Well, Michael, think about it this way.
Mm-hmm.
The Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos defenses were, we didn't do anything against the law either. As we understand the law, we're home free. Yes, we may have been making money or we may have been doing this or that, but it's not against the law. Along comes Preet Bharara.
Jury disagreed.
Yeah, well, that's right. Along comes Preet Bharara, and he says, no, it is against the law, and I'm expanding the universe of what is against the law, and I'm going to enforce that law.
Well, no money went into Cuomo's pocket. At least that was never alleged. What happened is that the real estate firms gave a lot of money to his campaign, and that's where it got uncomfortable. But that's not the same as money going into your pocket.
Now, my bet, sorry, Mike, but my bet is what's going to happen next is that, and Bharara was looking at this very carefully, I'm sure, because the other leg on the stool was the way in which people get themselves elected, campaign finance. And that would have been, he's got two of the guys in the room. The third guy in the room was, you know, it's not really true that you're not getting anything out of it. You're getting elected as a result of getting these deals.
It's big. It's just not a transfer of cash to your private bank account, which Shelley Silver got from the law firms, and the benefits to Dean Skelos' son. The jobs where he didn't have to show up for work, et cetera, those were personal gains.
But the bigger disgrace than Shelley Silver and the couple of millions he got is the fact that our politics are controlled by big money.
We need campaign finance reform. Maybe this will give Cuomo the ability to have credibility talking.
If he wants it. We don't know that he wants it. In Cuomo's case.
Says he wants to close the loopholes, but he needs the support of both houses.
His whole dance on reform is so interesting. Why did he put that committee in place in the first? Did he not foresee this? I have to shut up.
Yes.
Okay.
just momentarily, and then you'll have a whole half hour. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Two programming notes before we go on. One being that yesterday, as our bumper music, we were honoring the great David Bowie, who passed away over the weekend at the age of 69. We have a special coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, remembering the life of David Bowie. The special is called 10 from Bowie, and it is a David Bowie remembrance, and that will be happening at 11 o'clock this morning. Tonight at 9 o'clock, we will be covering the State of the Union address, that happening at 9, and we'll have the NPR address. We'll have the NPR coverage of the State of the Union address beginning at 9 p.m. That coming up tonight. Before we get to more topics on our docket, we go to our letters.
Oh, Jamie says, Alan, growing up in Brooklyn, besides the Hoffman Soda guy, you remember the Seltzer Man. I also have vague memories of it being delivered in Greenport by horse-drawn carts. I remember Seltzer. They put it in the back door, you remember, the big blue bottles, and they had a little thing on them. Do you remember that?
And they give it the
shot. No, I don't remember that. You're talking another century.
Delivered in Colony when you were a kid.
Seltzer came in.
I don't remember horse-drawn wagons either, Alan.
Seltzer came in bottles, and if you... They were under pressure, and if you press down the thing on them, it spit out the stuff. And my brother and I, Lewis and I, used to run around the house having seltzer bottle fights. Okay, that's all on that.
I'm looking at all my college students playing.
I think we should do a whole show on trivia.
And yes,
some other day.
Because Conrad says now the Golden Girls theme will be stuck in my head all day.
Thank you for being a friend. Okay. Travel down the road
and a confidant
and back again. That's right.
Okay, On the matter of the Moreland Act Commission,
yes.
From Luke, you have to take the attorney's words for what they are. Shutting down the commission wasn't illegal, but the commission has tons of leads. He was just making the comment that the overall shutting down wasn't illegal. That was never really the concern, rather the interactions with and what they were getting close to.
Right.
Well, okay.
I think that's true. I think he made a gesture, and he still got the meat of it. So, yeah, good letter.
Well, okay. okay, then. Okay, so now Michael says, what was the governor's reason for disbanding the Moreland Commission? The answer was, he was very specific about that. He said, I made it. I could take it down.
They're done. Purportedly, it was because he had reached it at four. The commission was getting too close to a lot of things, and it had forced the legislature to agree with him on substantial reforms. I've achieved what we set out to do. We don't need the commission anymore. It's my commission.
I can do what I want.
I can do what I want.
But the truth of the matter is we don't know whether it was getting close to the real estate people who are close to Cuomo. It's one thing to say getting close to the
legislature. And that is still being investigated by the U.S. attorney.
Well, okay. And then... let's see here. I get all this stuff like 7 ways to keep your knees strong. Who cares?
Well, if your knees are weak, you care.
Okay.
You weak-kneed person.
If you see back stuff, send
and,
it my
and,
way.
And Papagano says, it's got to be good. It's one of those.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, one of those things.
Okay. Jingles again.
Whatever happens, says Tom, to Alan's driving cap. Okay, gotcha.
Because you were wearing that last week, and now you have your Guthrie family cap.
Driving cap. I thought it was a limit on miles.
Okay. And I guess...
Giving us far too much credit.
Boy, you'd think there was no news on in the whole world listening to this.
I think that's it. Okay. Well, no, I mean, it is important to remember those things that were formulative in, from a Freudian sense in our lives, like you don't have to go to university to know when you're thirsty.
It would be nice if it hit more of our lives than the things we're talking about.
You don't know what hits your life. You don't know, really know that.
All right. So let's talk. Then let's talk about the Supreme Court and unions.
That's a good,
does that fit your requirement?
Oh, that's
a big story.
That's good. Well, it's bad, but it's a great story to talk about.
Depending on what they rule.
Yes.
Ooh,
so,
come on. You know what they're going to rule.
And it's looking bad.
It doesn't look good.
Okay, so as I wait for this to load into my system here, here we go. The Supreme Court seemed poised Monday to deliver a severe blow to organized labor. In a closely watched case brought by 10 California teachers, the court's conservative majority seemed ready to say that forcing public workers to support unions they have declined to join violates the First Amendment.
One more time when the Supreme Court is interpreting the
Staunch
First Amendment.
Defenders of the
yeah,
First Amendment.
In ways that we've never seen before. And this is so scary to me. It's forgetting our history. Unions, organized unions. And there are many things to criticize about the unions, but they have been instrumental in the development of a labor market in this country that has been humane and productive. And to go back, to turn their back on all of that now, which this seems to be doing, is frightening. The court itself seems to know that. They kept asking questions in their oral arguments that had to do with, well, if we turn this all back, what would be the impact? Tens of millions of people will be affected. That's right.
And
not good ways.
And then, Rosemary, you have to remember that there is a precedent here.
40 years of it.
In other words, the court has been clear on this in the past.
Yes.
So now, is the court a court? Or is it a now you could argue that Brown versus Board of Education falls into this, you know, that there was a change in philosophy. But does that mean if Hillary Clinton gets elected or Bernie Sanders and appoints two progressive Democratic judges to the court and that this court has overturned it, that they're going to overturn it again? What kind of respect is there for the institution as a decision making body?
Well, I mean, that's the way precedent works. You can always overturn precedent, and it's momentous when that happens for good and, as I think in this case, for bad. The civil rights changes have been bad. I think the perversion of the First Amendment
Citizen
to promote
yeah.
corporate power is bad. But, yeah, it can change with new justices. But the court has traditionally worked with precedent. Even if you disagree with the president, you don't want to rip it down all at once because it's such an upheaval in society.
Absolutely.
This court does not seem to have any problem with that.
Well, as I've said before, you'd have to be sightless in order to not understand that there are five conservative judges on the court. And those five conservative judges, nothing could be stronger in their minds in terms of who appointed them and what that group wants than doing away with union power. Period.
Right. What would happen if the court rules in favor of the conservatives who brought the suit here is that if you are a public employee and you're compelled, like you are in many states, such as California, New York, if you opt out of the public employee union membership, you're basically still required to pay an agency fee, and that supports the union in negotiating the contract that covers you and the terms of your employment that cover you. You can back out of some of the payments if they do political campaign.
And that really is a legitimate First Amendment,
like if the union were to support, you know,
Andrew Cuomo.
And you didn't like Cuomo, you could ask for a refund of that portion of your dues that went to that campaign. But generally, you are required to pay for the lawyers and the negotiators who get the deal that you're covered by. And to let people opt out of having to pay union dues in these kinds of government jobs would severely weaken the union coffers. People who are pressed for money would just make an economic decision, and it would weaken the unions, and that's what the conservatives want.
Okay, but there's another side to this. I'm with you, Mike. I mean, I think that what you've just said is right. Nevertheless, there will be somebody out there who doesn't believe what you just said and, mm-hmm. and who may really think that it is not correct to make them pay for a union that they don't particularly want. That, you know, in the old days, you had to join the union, you had to sign the card, you had to, you know, you had to get online and do that. Now it's just assumed that if you're going to work at SUNY, for example, that you have to be a member of the union. When I was at Channel 13, I had to join the union. It cost me some real money. And then at SUNY, I was a good, strong union member. At Channel 13, they gave me a jacket and a hat with a union with a name on it. But at SUNY, I never got a jacket and a hat.
No, I don't have a jacket and hat either. But let's make no mistake about it. This is not about rights. This is about power. And this ruling, if it goes against the precedent of 40 years, will financially cripple unions. It will make them much weaker in the public sector. That gives power to conservative governors and cost-cutting legislators who are going to impact wages. They're going to impact work conditions. We're going to see a decline in the condition of the American worker. That's what unions accomplished for all of their other faults. And believe me, I am not a big fan of unions. I think there's some benefit to them having to work to get more people to join and pay their dues. There's a benefit to that. However, to do it in a fell swoop like this, I think it's going to be ruinous to the public workplace. And it's been on the agenda of conservatives since Scott Walker launched an attack against the public unions.
The sentiment is certainly against public employee unions,
yep.
Which are very powerful here in New York, by the way. I don't think there's much threat to their power.
I mean, I grew up in Albany, and all of the people I went to high school with, I always thought I was better than them. They were going to be state workers and just, you know, do this dull job for 20 years and then retire. And now I had this exciting life and went all over, and I'm still working. And my friends are retired. They have a pension. The union has been fantastic for public employees. And we all should be paying. If we get the benefit of working with that union, we should pay the dues. But that's not what everyone thinks, and I just cannot imagine what it's going to be like without money coming in. And I feel worried about this.
We have just a few minutes before we have to go to break. We'll get to some letters first.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Andy from West Stockbridge says, panel, although I'm not as old as Alan.
No one is.
It's true. I grew up in the 60s in Hudson, New York, and we did have seltzer and beer deliveries at our house.
See, I thought it was going to be a union letter. I was really hoping it had to do with
the topic. Union driver who brought you that seltzer?
I do remember those beautiful blue seltzer bottles with a metal lever that shot out the seltzer. However, there was no horse-drawn wagon involved. Just saying. Thanks for your usual right. Great show.
Great.
Okay. And Janice says, and on topic on unions.
There you go.
Who would negotiate the contracts minus the union? Well, no, the union would obviously continue to negotiate contracts, right?
Right, but they wouldn't have as much power
because they wouldn't have
as much money.
The management could then just appeal directly to non-union workers and say, hey, you know, your union's telling you this, but here's what we'll do instead. It's the same way paternalistic companies.
Conquer.
This just gives more power to companies and to public entities. Bad.
Okay, and we heard from Pete, who says, dear panel, I think Albert Einstein said it quite well. We can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. And we certainly can't, and this is now back to Pete from Toland, and we certainly can't solve the problems of corruption by asking the corrupt to fix them. And by the way, I think it may go a little too far, but here's the discussion on that.
Back to the Moreland thing.
Yes. You got a whole bunch of people, right? Who are sitting there? These are good legislators. These are the non-stealers. These are the people who, right?
The non-thieves,
right? But they vote for the people who will keep the system.
Well, Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney, was in Kentucky last week speaking about ethics. He was invited to speak there, and what he basically said was he basically blamed those legislators who themselves are honest but let the dishonest policies of their leaders continue to pass.
And then the question is, are they honest?
Well,
because in fact, they're letting the leadership who speak for them keep the old system intact.
Exactly. That's the criticism that the U.S. attorney is making.
And he's right.
Quote,
and
unquote,
so am I.
Honest legislators.
So am I.
Well, I am. I mean, I've been talking about that for a long time. And, you know, people don't like it. That's...
Now, we have to go to a break. Do you want to read? I
think that's it, my friend.
Okay. So let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll get to another topic or two. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support comes from Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Custom-designed, panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly, passive, and solar design elements. Noble-home.net. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans. So our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. If you would like to drop us a line and tell us your thoughts on these issues or random facts that you have in your head. Let's go on to some other topics in the news here. Well, first of all, of course, as we mentioned, we'll be covering the State of the Union address tonight. We'll be having the NPR coverage of the president's final State of the Union address.
Right.
And this is what we know so far, that the address will be positive. It'll be uplifting. It will be inspirational, we hear, from the White House. And it is it's a swan song, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and he's going to want to make the case that he's been a good president. Yeah. And there will be many of us who believe he has. And there will be many of people who don't agree.
Now, there in an article, which I shared with you, but that was in the New York Times yesterday, also talked about setting a tone for the 2016 presidential campaign.
Sure.
Which maybe needs a shift in tone.
Yeah, the Republicans have the Republican candidates have been unrelentingly pessimistic. America's going down the tube. We don't have power. We don't have respect in the world. It's a mess. We have idiots for leaders. All of that. And I guess we'll hear more of that on Thursday when we go back to the Republican debates.
And two things that I've read in the paper recently. One was about a poll which said something like 67% of people of Americans think that we are not on the right track.
Headed in the wrong way, right?
Yeah. Okay, so there's that. And he's got to confront that, you know, in his talk tonight. And the second, I saw this morning, I don't remember where I saw it, but somebody was saying that Bloomberg is now considering, and you know he's polling, considering a third-party run if the – and this is my own surmise. Mm-hmm. This is not what I read, but – if the Republicans come up with a right-wing candidate.
Oh, in other words, get the Democrat elected, he'll be the spoiler.
No, I think to get himself elected.
President?
Michael Bloomberg?
Yeah. He's always wanted to be president.
But that seems like a real...
I thought he concluded pretty much concluded.
Yeah, I heard there was a draft effort, but I don't think he was behind it, was he?
I think Bloomberg, if he wanted this, would do it the right way. And this is not the right way to do it.
What's the right way?
It's to start years early. It's to do the Hillary or the Bernie thing. Built an organization, and he has the know-how and the money to actually do that. Why would he make this last-minute doomed attempt?
Because it's his assessment that he could win. That's why. Because he didn't know that the Republican Party was going to commit suicide. If you read in yesterday's paper, they had all of the stuff about how the Republican leadership, the establishment leadership, is bereft. They don't know what to do about this right-wing split.
So you're saying he'd run as a Republican?
No, he'd run as an independent.
It would... Well, perhaps he would take enough from the Democrats and enough from the less disaffected Republicans to pull together a coalition. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, just what this race needs is some more entries. We don't have enough candidates.
Well, no, Rosemary, I think, you know, you always have to assume self-interest in all of this stuff. So if he thinks he can win, he'd run.
I think you're right. If he thinks he could win, that's why he hasn't run.
Well, he has commissioned a poll testing how he would fare in a three-way race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Some pundits have speculated that a Trump nomination would leave most white-collar Republicans looking for a representative of their interests, but it's hard to see how Bloomberg would fit that bill, although he's no I'm reading from the New York Times. But anyway, the poll has been commissioned.
Well, I doubt that the president will be talking about this in his State of the Union tonight. I sort of miss the State of the Union addresses where he got up there and said, let's be a real country and do the following. And he would name all these wonderful, completely unachievable goals like peace in our time and end of hunger and lead in refugees. And then everybody would ignore it. So I suspect that's going to be the same thing he does tonight. He'll go in there and try to be happy. And really, Obama's president has not done happy well. He kind of scolds us about being too pessimistic, which doesn't come off. And fewer people than ever will be listening to the speech. The numbers, people who watch and listen to the State of the Union, have been declining since the Bush years. So I don't see this as a really big, momentous political event.
But he is helping to define his legacy by what he says tonight. I mean, it's his swan song, so to speak.
The other interesting thing is how much he's using social networking media, new ways he's gone on Instagram. He's taking a page from Donald Trump, of all things, who has really learned to speak directly to voters and to cut out the media, the donors, the press. He goes directly to people.
So really, there's nothing he could say tonight that would inspire you?
Boy, that's interesting.
I find him a very inspiring leader. Mm-hmm. I do. So we just disagree on that. I want to read one letter, if I may, because it's so adulatory about me. It goes as follows. Alan knows nothing. Cuomo wouldn't talk big dollar plans unless there is a billion-dollar budget surplus. Yes, but $1 billion is not
when 100 billion.
When it's $100 billion.
Yeah, it'll get it started. And
he has to
the
win
guy
the
who
Powerball.
Takes over after Cuomo will have to worry about how to pay for it.
Not only does he have to win the Powerball, Rosemary, but so do I.
$1.4 billion.
Oh,
it is the largest Powerball jackpot in the entire world. It has never been this high. I find the most incredible aspect of this to be that since late October, early November, not one person has gotten the jackpot, even given the millions and millions and millions of people who have played it, which shows the astronomical odds to it. But also to me makes it just kind of fun because
so
eventually it's got to be somebody.
You know, Money Magazine had this fabulous article that did the math.
Right.
And it looked at if you spent, it's something over $500 million, you could buy up every combination possible in the Powerball and win it. And it would be worth your while to do that if you could
investment.
Get the 500 minutes.
Right, you just have to hire so many people to go into convenience stores and
buy
tickets.
Exactly. It would take you 9 years getting one ticket per second to get all those combinations.
Now, I know all the historians are going to get mad at me for this, but I've always thought Marie Antoinette had it right about let them eat cake, even if she's being misinterpreted or if she never said it. It's a brilliant statement. And we don't want to raise taxes on people, but we raise all this money. We are fools, I tell you, fools. And I can't tell you enough how fast it took me to get to that store around the corner to get my
tickets.
Well, it's good that you get it in Massachusetts, Alan, as a Massachusetts resident, because in New York State, they're going to take out about 9% before you get it. The lottery is going to take out 25%. To give to the federal government.
Well, Canadians are coming over the border, and the government will take 30% out of them.
Well, so you might only end up with,
so
if
glad
you win this, you might only end up after taxes with $880 million.
I'm so glad you said this, Mike, because
I'd
I didn't
be happy
know about
with $800.
That.
So it's we're the second largest. Of the money that you would get of the amount, it's the second lowest, I think.
Yeah. That's correct.
Well, right. I have to stop at the West Stockbridge store on my way home tonight because I didn't realize.
Maybe give me some money. Will you pick up one?
Because I didn't shoot. No, because I didn't realize.
So what are we talking about? Like a million schmillion, right?
A million schmillion. Let me just ask one question, Alan. For the record, if you do win the $1 billion lottery, will there be another fund drive in a couple weeks?
No, but no, because you know what I have to do is offer.
Think of how many tote bags you'd have.
The biggest match of all. The biggest match of all time. I would have to do that. Yeah. But it would seem to me I could do that. I've thought about that. Mm. But the problem would be some point I'll be dead, you know, and who would do this kind of stuff? So you put the money up and then you say, okay, I'll put $1 million up. But that million will go into a locked box? No, into a fund. a fund to keep WMC going if you match it. Don't you think that's a good way of doing it?
Yeah, that's
good.
That's nice. Okay, yeah, because you have to get the people's interest.
I love all the discussions about if you won, what would you
Isn't
do?
Isn't that great?
I
mean, to
really,
me, it's worth
it's
the $2.
It's so
bucks
revealing, absolutely.
To have those discussions.
Yeah. What about $20?
You're buying a dream.
Whatever. Yeah. Whatever you're up for.
I got into a major fight with a friend because I said I'd give all my kids $1 million right off the top. He goes, no, that's bad. That doesn't help them. They'd waste it. It's $1 million free. Waste it.
No, pay off their mortgage.
We're talking about a 1.3. Do you imagine if it's one person? Can you imagine that?
Odds are 1 in 292.2 million. It's a better chance of being struck by lightning you're drowning.
But Mike, somebody will win. In other words,
somebody will win.
Those odds you're talking about, but they'll win. So their odds are 100%.
Yeah. I mean, eventually, nobody has won for several weeks. So eventually somebody will win and they'll get a lot of money.
Yeah.
And
it's
kind of fun. Well, you know,
We're
fools who are
going to... And the state has made a lot of money selling tickets.
I say progressive taxation is the right answer.
you're really true, but I still want a couple more lottery tickets.
Well, in the story I sent you, we're out of time, but the story I sent, which is really funny because the states are having a problem because they only have three numbers on their digital readouts.
Yes.
And
it reminds me of this when gasoline
went over
a certain amount.
Yeah.
They had to change the machinery.
They had to change all the machinery.
They didn't know what to do.
Now it's gone the other way.
So we're out of time, but I thank you very much. WAMC.org for the lockbox.
Oh,
help us
get
out.
In,
we're
get
at
in.
We're at 356. We want to get to 500 to get the $25,000 challenge. WAMC.org. Alan, Rosemary, Michael, thank you very much, and we'll be back after the short break.